It's 2 o'clock, everybody. And somebody wants to be out here in an hour and a half, so we better get busy. Okay, so we'll call the regular, or no, special meeting Monday, October 14th to try to do a roll call.
Okay. Tom?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Paul? Josie said she's traveling today, but she will try to attend when she gets to Akitan in time. Warren?
Here.
Jim?
Here.
Chris?
Here.
Samantha? We have a call.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have, I should do this, I guess. King Cole, do you have any public in your audience?
Besides the assembly members, it's just Stuart Brandel and myself here.
Okay. Cole Bay? Nelson Lagoon? False pass?
No, nobody.
Standpoint, it's Beverly, Jim, and myself. Akitan? The Anchorage office.
Yes, Mayor, Sister Back, it's myself, Annie, Glenora, Paul, Ernie, Charlotte, and Talia.
Yeah. Thank you. We have a quorum.
Yeah.
Okay, we need a motion to adopt the agenda. And whoever makes the motion, would you please amend it to put ordinance number 12 after the resolutions?
So move this, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
I'll second it. This is Chris.
Thank you, Chris. If there's no other corrections to the agenda, if there's no objections, agenda will stand with the movement of the ordinances to after the resolutions. Okay. Public comments? Anyone feel like they may have a conflict of interest? Now would be a good time. Okay, so we're down to certification of the October 1st, 2024 regular election. We need a motion for this.
I make a motion that we accept the certification of the October 1st, 2024 regular election.
Second it, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you, Mayor Osterbach and Assembly. The election went well. The Canvas Committee met last Friday, October 11, to review the election materials and count the absentee by mail, special needs, and question ballots. There were 8 absentees by email and in-person ballots, 2 question ballots, 1 special need and special needs, and about 22 by mail only ballots. The 2 question ballots were not counted because they are not registered at the Lucian's Eastboro. The results of the October 1st, 2024 regular election are as follows. Assembly seat C, Chris Banca. The Assembly seat D, Brenda Lee Wilson. Assembly seat G, Tom C. Hoblet. School board seats A, Amy Mack. School board seat F, Rayette McGlashan. Also included in the packet is the regular election results, the Canvas Committee report, and the voting percentages by community. And the term of the newly elected officials will begin first Monday after the certification. And if you have any questions, please let me know. If there's no questions.
Hearing none. Go ahead.
Okay, now we're going to swear in the newly elected officials. I sent the oath of office for each of the assembly. They can do it one by one, I guess. We can start with Chris. Just read off the oath of office.
I, Chris Babcock, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States of Alaska and the laws and ordinances of the Aleutians East Borough, State of Alaska, and that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of the Assembly Member, so help me God.
And for Brenda.
I, Brenda Lee Wilson, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States, the State of Alaska, and the laws and ordinances of the Aleutians East Borough, State of Alaska, and that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of Assembly Member. So help me God.
Tom?
I, Tom Ciola, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitutions of the United States and the State of Alaska and the laws and orders of the Aleutians East Borough, State of Alaska, and I will honestly and faithfully and impartially perform the duties of Assembly Member. So help me God.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Congratulations to the three. When do they take their seats?
Monday, following the certification. Oh.
So after certification, you guys will take your new seats. So welcome back. All right. Minutes. We have minutes of September 12th. Do we need a motion and a second?
I'll make a motion. We accept the minutes of September 12th. Chris.
This is Brenda, I'll second.
Thank you, Brenda. Okay, everybody had a chance to go over the minutes? Anybody have any questions or corrections to the minutes?
Let's see.
Hearing none. Unless there's an objection, the minutes will stand as written. Okay, before I go on to financials, when we made the motion, certification, did we
vote? Roll call.
Did we do a roll call?
No.
Okay. We have to back up. I'm having a day today, I'll tell you. So, anyway, we need to go back and cert, and we've got a motion and a second to certify, but we need a roll call vote for it.
Warren?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
I'll just read that again. Okay, thank you. You're supposed to kick me on anything. Okay, so we are down to financials. First off, we've got directors, finance directors report, which is informational.
Motion.
Oh, that's what I mean. Jackie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. I have the first on my report is to let you guys know how the field work for the audit went. They were here between September 23rd and the 26th without any incidents for travel, which was nice. Since they performed some of their testing for the payroll and the grant testing, they were able to finish testing for the revenues, helicopter fund, cash account, accounts payable, capital assets, the PERS, and other entity-wide entries on site. There may be a few additional sample requests coming in the next month or so if they need to perform any further testing. The financial statements should be being sent to BDO shortly. They're just wrapping up and we'll have the last of our entries to put in to close out the year in BDS. And then I'll make the journal entries for as well in Cassell. And then that will be the final time we actually use BDS once we close the year. While they were here, I did have some time to sit down and talk to the auditors about what's going to be needed next year to test the conversion. And so that way we have all the necessary documents properly set aside so that that goes smooth at the end of next year, is which when they'll test to make sure all our balances match the ending balances of this year and the new balances in this the year that we're in now. One of the sections of the financial policies and procedures that I'm working on in this planning cycle is the subawards and the federal award process. I've been doing a lot of research in the CFR to make sure that we have some necessary checklists, I guess, to say, to go through to make sure we're doing all the processes that's required by the federal government when we receive federal funding. It's a bit more detailed than our ordinance states us to be, so I just want to make sure that there's places that where if it requires further action than what our ordinance states, that we have it listed someplace so that people, when they receive a federal award, know that these are the requirements you're expected to follow, even though you have ordinances that say different. So I'm working on doing that and then making sure that we're properly notifying any sub-recipients of the award, since this year we do have one of Charlotte's grants does have sub-awards written within the grant. So I want to make sure that we hit that right from the beginning versus when the auditors tell us we need to. The routine tasks are going very smoothly for Cassell. It was an adjustment for sure, but it's a lot easier now, more streamlined the processes are. When we are just waiting for the 15th of month to enter in the fish tax collection, and then September financials should be wrapped up. In the packet is your August financials. And so as soon as, if you have any questions about that, I can answer those as well. But that is my report for the packet. And I do want to apologize in advance. I forgot to put the page numbers on the bottom of the August financials, and I will not forget that again.
Thank you, Jackie. Questions for Jackie? Okay. So we are down to the August financials. We need a motion and a second to bring it on the floor.
This is Brenda, so moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
Second.
Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly, in the packet are the August 2024 financials. Really, the only thing I'm going to point out today is on the very first page under the first line item, which is 10,004,000 for the raw fish tax. In the first column, it shows what we have received in August, which is $248,222.17. Please note that this is 45% of the previous five-year average, and it's only 52% of the previous 10-year average. So we are well below what we normally receive in July. If you do combine and go to the second column, the year-to-date actual, that's $646,000. The combined total is about 54% of what we normally get over the five-year average for those 2 months, which is around $1.2 million. So we are lower, which everybody knows, but just to point that out. Otherwise, our interest revenues are still coming in quite high. We got $140,000 in interest revenue in August, which is great. That means that our cash flow management plan and how we're doing things is working, and we're trying to get as much interest yielded as possible. So that's great. Other than that, everything else is basically tracking along as it should for the second month of the year. And if there's any questions, please let myself or Jackie know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Mayor, one quick question. Thank you for the report, Annie, but perhaps now that we have the capability of putting the financial report in particular up before us as we're discussing it, it might help people follow along. And
yeah.
And even if they have questions, we can, you know, make sure that everybody, I think it might be useful. That's all. Yeah, suggestion. That's all.
Thank you. We can do that. We can have the screen shared.
Yeah.
So I was referencing the first line item, 10,004,000 for the raw fish tax, and also 10,004,100 for the interest revenue. And that shows that we had $140,000 of interest for August of 2024.
Okay. Other questions for Annie? Hearing none, call the motion.
Brenda?
Yes.
Grace?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. In your investment report, in your package, so we're going to move to resolutions. First resolution we have before us is Resolution 2513 relating to the disposal of real property, authorizing the mayor to terminate the teacher's quarters lease and relinquish and release all right, title, and interest in the land, including all improvements and aperture. So we need a motion and second.
I make a motion. We accept it. Ordinance 2501. This is Chris.
It's Resolution 2513.
Sorry. I was in order. Sorry. Recommend that we bring Resolution 2513 to the table. Sorry.
Thanks, Chris.
This is Brenda. I'll second.
Thank you, Brenda. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Oshbeck and Assembly. So there is an agenda statement in the packet for Resolution 2513. But basically, the borough has and may exercise all rights and powers to acquire, hold, dispose of, or manage real property, both inside and outside the borough. The borough holds all real property in trust for the benefit of the public and shall hold, manage, and dispose of such property in a manner consistent with that trust, and it must ensure that the public receives fair and reasonable compensation or benefit from the borough actions in the disposal of real property. Real property does include interest in real property as well as rights to real property. It also includes leases, easements, security interests, and license permits and other options. The borough does have a lease with the state of Alaska for the municipal land and owns the public school teachers' quarters located on that property in Nelson Lagoon. The teachers' quarters were vacated on or around 2012-2013 when the Nelson Lagoon School was closed, and the disposal of the Nelson Lagoon apartment has been a strategic initiative on the strategic plan for the past 5 years. The borough does desire to dispose of the Nelson Lagoon teachers' quarters, including the land and all improvements and pertinences associated with it. Section 50.10.060 in the borough code states that disposal of real property may be by sealed bids, outcry, auction, lottery, first come, first serve, negotiation, or such other method as the assembly may provide in the resolution authorizing the disposal. Administration believes that the best method of disposal for this is via a teacher's quarters lease document that the state of Alaska has provided that would terminate the lease that's dated January 16th, 1997, between the state of Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development in trust for any future city in the Nelson Lagoon as lessor and the borough as lessee. It would relinquish the teacher's housing and any other appurtenances. So we've done something similar for this quite a few years ago for the Nelson Lagoon School. We relinquished that to the school. In this instance, what we'll do instead, and based off what the state's guidance is that we would terminate the lease with the state, and then the property and the building would go back to the state. And I've also had conversations with the Nelson Lagoon tribe, at least with the president of the tribe or of the village council. And then if the village council is interested, they would contact the state directly for that property, and it would take the borough out of the middle. So this is the way out of giving this back. And then, like I said, the tribal council can talk to the state directly. So I recommend that this is the route we go. The reason we asked for the items to switch is per our code, a resolution for this has to pass first before we go forward with the ordinance. So this needs to be approved for the ordinance that is also in the packet to be introduced. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none. Question on motion?
Tom? Tom?
Yes. Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Warren?
Brenda?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. Before us, we have Resolution 2514. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
This is Brenda, so moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
Jim, one second.
Thank you, Jim. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbach and Assembly, Resolution 2514 is approving the new account codes outlined in the new financial software system. We've already talked about this today earlier in the workshop with the conversion, but on June 17, 2024, the Borough Assembly passed the Borough's FY25 budget. Since then, the Borough has converted to a new financial software system. Due to the conversion, there are several differences in the financial statements that have occurred. There's an outline of those, which is figures are presented in a different order. The general fund has been changed to Fund 10 from Fund 01 for clerical purposes. Grant and permanent fund projects have been separated, and a couple other items. There is a list of the account changes outlined in Attachment A for that easily shows the new account and the old account. Technically, you have already accepted these when you approved the July 2024 financials at the September 12th assembly meeting. However, we wanted this to go before you. It shows, like I said, it shows the new accounts. It's in a more transparent manner and is now before the assembly for approval. Jackie, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, I do not.
Okay, so with that, if there's any questions, please let me know.
Thanks, Annie. Questions?
One quick one, Mr. Mayor. Jackie, are the number of accounts still pretty much the same, or is there any difference in the total amount of accounts?
We've lessened the number of accounts within the actual system, but the ones that we use is pretty much the same. In the actual BDS system, there was a lot more accounts in there, but they were all inactive.
Other questions? Hearing none. Question?
Chris?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
And Gary's.
Thank you. So before us, we have Resolution 2515. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
This is Chris. I make a motion. We bring Resolution 2515 to the floor for discussion.
Second, Warren.
Annie?
Yes, Mayor, I'm back in Assembly. So Resolution 2515 authorizes the mayor to negotiate and execute a contract with Dowell to provide progressive design, build, solicitation, and delivery services for Sandpoint Pool in an amount not to exceed $180,500. Sorry, I might have butchered that. But so the borough has conducted numerous repairs to the Sandpoint swimming pool. However, the pool is still losing a significant amount of water, and the school district is not operating the facility. The pool has exceeded its useful life, and administration has received direction to pursue building a new pool in the existing location at the Sandpoint School. A progressive design build procurement method has been selected to obtain a contractor to build a new pool. A progressive design build requires the proposing team to submit qualifications, ideas, innovative solutions, etc., but no plans. The owner only first needs to develop concept sketches and project goals, constraints, requirements, not a full 15% documents to solicit the RFP. There's a lot less risk on the proposing team, so it'll be more attractive to propose, and the final construction price, however, won't be known until the project is partway through a target maximum price is negotiated. Administration did request a proposal from Dow to provide progressive design, build, and delivery services for the Sandpoint pool. The proposal includes phase one, which is solicitation development, which would be done lump sum. Phase two, which is performance criteria, sketches, and miscellaneous support, which would be for time and materials in an amount not to exceed $55,940. Phase three, which is advertising and selection, which would be lump sum. Phase four is negotiations and contracting, which would also be lump sum. And then finally, there's phase five, which is the design management, which was also lump sum for a total of $180,493. Construction management is not included in this proposal and will be submitted under a separate scope fee amendment. This would be paid for if approved outside of the project contingency fund to pay for these services. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions from the assembly?
Paul has a question.
I just have one, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead, Chris.
I understand what's going on with the pool over there and also with the school over there. I kind of am a little leery of doing this. How much life do we have left on the school over there? If we put a brand new pool on the school, we've already put how many hundreds of thousands of dollars in the electrical system there in the school. Now the sewer's messed up at the school. It just seems like we just keep throwing bandages, and I'd hate us to see us build a brand new swimming pool, and then the next thing we're going to be doing is, are we going to continue to put bandages on the school there? Are we looking at possibly seeing where we might find funding to build a new school or something? I'm just a little unsure in with the way finances are and stuff right now. It's something that we really need to look into. How much longer is the life on that school over there?
Well, once this deed grant is done, I mean, basically, in the beginning, when we were looking at the school, you know, we went through and basically they call it the bones of the school are fine. So I don't know how many years it will actually extend it, but I would imagine quite a few. So, I mean, if you wanted to hold off until we built a new school, that could be quite a few years down the road. Or I guess another option would be to build a pool freestanding away from the building.
That was something else I was thinking about too. It would be interesting to see what it would cost to build a new school. To build a new pool, we're not committing that it's going to happen, but some of the concerns that we've been having with the school over there, and I know it sounds like the bones are good and everything, but it'd be kind of nice maybe to have a white paper done on that school. And I think we did have one on the swimming pool just to kind of bring us up to how much money we've been actually spending over there on this stuff. And maybe it's time to stop the bandages and go in for the surgery, so.
Well, you can look at it too. King Cove basically has got a fairly new school and it has, everything has problems, and it has problems that we spend quite a bit of money on too. But I'm not an architect or anything, so I don't know. I have to go by what the engineers tell me. But it's something to think about. But as far as building a new school, it would be when this school was built in what the community is today, and the amount of students that are here, it would be a totally different concept than what you see up there right now. So. Correct. I think people need to think about that too.
It just was a concern I have. I'm not saying I don't support the swimming pool, because I do, but I just, we need to really be looking at, how finances are right now and the scary realistics of what's going on in the fish world and with the uncertainties of what's going on with Peter Pan and the uncertainties of what's going to be going on in Accutan, and So, but I don't have any problem supporting this, them putting together some kind of a build thing that, it would be interesting to see what it would cost. So that's all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Paul.
Eddie had her hand up too, but I had a few questions. But first, from previous discussions, informal with people, if a new pool costs $10 million, I don't think anybody could say that I'm wrong right now. We have no idea. But if there's some amount of money, whether it's 5, 10, or who knows, where would that money end up coming from? That's the first question I have.
Annie?
Mayor Ostrick, back in assembly, I would have to work with Jackie to figure out where those funds would come. We don't know how much it's going to cost to build the pool. It could range from anywhere probably between $2 million or more. If it's in the same location, I would assume that's what it would cost. So we would have to look. We are looking for grant opportunities, other funding sources. Glenora and Talia are applying for some money with Rasmussen Foundation and other routes to see if we can find some funding assistance. But I don't have an answer to that exactly at this moment.
Okay.
One thing we can do, because the permanent fund is set up to support the school system more than anything else, once we find out what this would cost to build, with the approval of the assembly, we could take money out of the permanent fund to do it if we had to.
And then I have a question about the wording on this resolution. It appeared that basically this would put things on hold for about a year, or did I read that wrong? I'm not sure if I...
I don't know if... putting hold on it, but once we get this, then Dow will go ahead and work on the solicitation and get that developed and out. I don't have a timeline of what that will take, but we do want to make sure we get all the information that we have out to the potential contractors correctly. So it will take a while, but I don't have a estimate yet on timing.
Then finally, I guess I have some of the same concerns, Chris, is about the amount of money we may or may not be spending on this. But I think perhaps I'm kind of reluctant to just jump out and go for a new pool right now, but because I think we're missing one step that would help us make this decision to go for a new pool, or maybe there's still an outside chance of fixing the existing pool, and the one step that we're missing and haven't solved, and I think there's a solution for it, is find the leak first. Once we know what the existing leak is and how big a problem that may or may not be, then we can make a better decision about the future building. Thank you.
Other comments or questions?
This is Brenda.
So, go ahead, Brenda.
This stuff is coming out of monies that we already have that isn't going to cost anymore, right? So, but talking about a new pool, is the new pool only going to be in Sandpoint, or can it be in King Cove? Because if you're putting a new pool, depends on where you put it, where is it going to be most feasible and economic? We have a heating system up here that works awfully good with all our buildings and our school at the moment. So the reductions in cost of keeping things heated, things like that. So those are things I think it just doesn't automatically make it a Sandpoint pool. I don't think there's just discussions on that could be had.
Well, I can't tell you as mayor, I can't tell you where you have to put the pool. A lot of it would be done on cost too. Like here, if you put it here, you would be putting it in an existing footprint that's there for it. Over if we brought it to King Cove, then we'd have to build another building, so that would add quite a bit more money to it. But in the end, I think it's going to be up to the assembly to decide if you want it here or King Cove or Cold Bay or wherever you want it, I suppose. That's your job.
Hey, Warren here. Yes. I look at this and I see that we got some plans going on here, but as longer we wait, we can't hold up on this right now. We got to get this started because the people we're affecting here is our young folks. We leave out a generation of kids not to be able to learn to swim. That's not good for the communities at all. We gotta get this done ASAP. We had a really good system going there. Unfortunately, Mother Nature took its toll on the pool there. It took its toll on Alaska Pool also out here. Something we're gonna have to live with. We're gonna have to find the funding to take care of part of our education system, with kids learning how to swim. So that's my take on this. I appreciate having this resolution here today. So if we could get approval, that would be fine by me.
Other comments or questions?
Mr. Mayor, just a final comment, if I may. In writing, somewhere in this report, it did mention it takes up to a year for this engineering firm, which we seem to be stuck with, to come up with a design. And then we still wouldn't know what it cost. So anyway, we're going, by the time we get to a bid, and a bid awarded, if we're able to get that far under this plan, will be 5 years without a pool, probably. And I'm not particularly happy, but about that. And I think finding the leak, even if we go ahead with this idea to design a new pool, we should still try to find where the leak is. That may change how we make a decision on this. And I've always been in support of a pool, strong support of a pool. And Sandpoint is the biggest school, so it makes some sense. At least right now, the enrollment is higher than any other place. So it does make sense to keep the pool there, too, even though I'm from Sandpoint. Perhaps I'm biased on that. Thank you.
Well, one of the reasons I decided that we should move forward with replacing it is as I started to find out more information on some of the things that took place in that pool, existing pool, it is an aluminum shell that was built 40 plus years ago. Once I found out that there was electricity basically running through the water in the pool for a period of time, and then there was at one point there actually were lights in the pool, and at some point they did some work on the pool and the lights were basically shut off, but I heard that the wiring wasn't removed. So you've got aluminum that's probably not marine grade, I wouldn't think, and it wasn't designed for a salt bath type clarification or whatever you want to call that, that they use in the water. So you basically got salt water, electricity, and aluminum that's probably not the proper grade. So that pool could be pin leaking all over the place. We don't know. So we could spend another year digging around up there trying to figure it out and then continue on to replace it. But I think at 40 plus years, and then with the big earthquake we had last year, that 8 point whatever it was, could have cracked more stuff in there. That's why I'm kind of pushing to let's get somebody on board, get one design, get somebody in here and build it. You came up with your own timelines on how long it would take. I have no idea if you're right or not, but hopefully it wouldn't take 5 years to build a pool. I think when they did the one in Alaska, it took us about a year and a half, the time we started till it was done. The first time they replaced it.
Not correct you. However, I was referring to when the pool closed down, the 5 years, not from today, 5 years.
Oh. Okay. Other comments? Okay. Hearing none. Questions on the motion?
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. For us, we have resolution 2515. We get a motion of the second to bring it to the floor. 2516. Resolution 2516 is before us. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
This is Chris. I say we bring resolution 2516 to the table for review.
This is Brenda. I'll second.
Thank you. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly, Resolution 2516 approves a pay increase for the Borough Finance Director. As you know, the Borough has a finance department. The finance director is part of that department, and our finance director was hired with the Borough in July 18th, 2011. Per Section 4.32 of the Aleutians East Borough Employee Handbook, it states that merit-based increases may also be awarded when an employee has reached some tangible professional milestone, such as the completion of educational courses, degrees, or certifications that directly relate to the employee's work duties for the borough. Such increases shall be awarded at the mayor's sole discretion. As a general rule, such compensation may be awarded at any level up to and including the amount of the cost of living adjustment. However, the mayor may deviate from this guideline with the approval of the assembly. Merit-based increases are subject to appropriation by the assembly. So as you know, as in what we discussed earlier in the workshop and also in a prior resolution, the finance department recently transitioned the financial software from BDS to Cassell. This was a big, huge undertaking, and administration considers the financial software system transition a tangible professional milestone. The mayor and administration have also reviewed the finance director's past employee evaluations and recommends a 2.5% increase. This increased salary would increase her salary in the amount of a little less than $2,000. If approved, the adjustment would be made active on October 18th, 2024, pay date for the October 13th through the October 26th, 2024 pay period. An adjustment to the FY25 budget may be required, and an adjustment can be made at the end of the fiscal year, or if other items need to be amended at mid-year, we can do it then. But the cost of living amount in FY25 was 1.5. Since this increase exceeds the cost of living amount, it requires assembly approval. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. But I do really strongly recommend that the finance director does get this increase. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. And I've talked this over with Annie, of course. I was the one that had to agree to this. And I think over the last 3 years, it's been a lot of work converting over to this new financial software system from a system that has been outdated and hard to work with. I think the old system cost us a lot of money over the years because of the time taken by the auditors that we pay on an hourly basis or contract basis. So I really think the work was put in, and I think to show our appreciation, I recommend that we do this. Thank you. Any questions from the assembly?
Just a quick note. I appreciate the work that she's doing, but I also appreciate the fact that she's in the office, and we have some, I think all workers should be in the office, myself. But anyway, just thought I'd mention that.
Okay. Other comments? Question on the motion?
Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We need a motion to bring resolution 2517 to the floor.
Jim, I'll make a motion.
Thanks, Jim.
This is Brenda, I'll second.
Thank you, Brenda. Annie?
Ms. Mayor, back in assembly, so resolution 2517 approves a pay increase for the borough accounting clerk. Once again, we have finance directing finance department. The accounting clerk is part of that department. Our accounting clerk was hired on November 14th, 2022. Same thing applies with the employee handbook and everything, but our accounting clerk was very much involved in this transition as well, and I recommend a 2.5 increase for him too. And if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. And again, for the assembly, you know, with what's going on in the borough, our fishing industry, our finances, I think it's important that we've moved on to this new system. And I think with the team that we have, the education that they've got in the system, the schooling that they've taken, that we're justified in providing the small pay increase to show our appreciation. Thank you. Questions? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Warren?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Paul? Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. So before us, we have resolution 2518. We need a motion and second to bring it to the floor.
So moved. This is Brenda, so moved.
This is Chris, second.
Thank you. Annie?
Yeah, Mayor Osterbeck, I will defer to Charlotte for this one.
Can they hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. So before you is resolution 2518, authorizing the mayor to negotiate and execute a contract with Winter Inc. for Pacific Cloud Tagging Research in an amount not to exceed $147,080. For some reason, I apologize, I don't have an agenda statement in here. I thought I'd put one together. But it's pretty straightforward. So as you all know, the borough received a rather large grant from the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission for the quad tagging project. And within that proposal, we had allocated funds for a sole source contract for Kimberly Rand, who has a specific expertise in cod tagging and has been participating in the tagging project prior to the PAC States grant as a NOAA affiliate and collaborator contracted through her employer Linker. And the award ceiling is for the $147,080 to provide support with data analyses, reports, technical memos, publications, a whole host of things, actually. And so per the grant, we have this money through July 31st. There is a possibility that that will be extended, but in the event that happens, we would come back with a contract amendment. And the Natural Resources Department recommends allowing the mayor to execute this contract for the ceiling amount listed. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Charlotte. Questions for Charlotte?
Mayor, just to clarify the budget amount, how much of that is our money, or do we have any money in this?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, yeah. We don't have any money through this. This is completely grant funded.
And then I I'll have no problem supporting this. However, we do get, with this type of ag system, we do get limited results. I don't know if it's as effective as it could be for the amount of money, but I'll support the resolution. Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Question on the motion?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. So before us is resolution 2519. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
This is Brenda. I make that motion.
Thank you, Brenda.
Second and Warren.
Thanks, Warren. And Charlotte, I believe this is yours also.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So before you is resolution 2519, authorizing the mayor to negotiate and execute a contract with Cordata LLC for continued development of electronic tools for the Trawl EM project in an amount not to exceed $23,310. Again, this is very straightforward. So as you all know, the borough has a grant with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation this year, 2024, for the final year of the Trawl EM project. And Cordata LLC has been instrumental in developing the Western Gulf Fisherman's Portal software, as well as integrating all of the electronic tools that we use in Trawl EM. And so, you know, we're basically just extending this contract for this final year of 2024. It is already October. However, it's the work that he's doing is really just to finalize some of the tools that we use to get it ready for regulatory implementation next year in 2025, and possibly even expanding the data portal and e-log services over to the Kodiak fleet, because as you know, we have a shared grant this year with the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank. And obviously, PSC hotspot mapping is a very big deal right now in the Gulf of Alaska. So the ceiling amount right now is for $23,310. There is a possibility of doing a budget amendment for this, since we will have some extra funds. But again, that would come through an amendment. And so at this point, we the Natural Resource Department recommends that the mayor be allowed to negotiate and execute this contract with Cordata, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Charlotte? Okay. Question on the motion.
Jim?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Warren?
Yeah.
Paul?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. We have resolution 2520. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
That's so moved.
This is Chris. I'll second it.
Thank you. Ernie, I believe this is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the memo covers both 2520 and 2521, but I'll just start with 2520. After the memo are two letters, one from the City of Sandpoint requesting general fishery disaster determination, and then a letter from Representative Sarah Vance, the chair of the House Fisheries, and she had requested for the Gulf of Alaska a pink salmon disaster. Her original letter left out South Penn, and then she had constituents in Homer say, hey, what about the South Penn? And she said, oh, I thought South Penn was in Chignik. But anyway, so there's that, and then there's two resolutions. The resolution 2520 requests a fishery disaster determination for the 2024 South Alaska Peninsula commercial pink salmon fishery. I would just note that if you count just the five previous even years, the 2024 harvest was 51.4 5% of the previous average, and that is within what the what NOAA generally accepts as granting a positive determination. There's a little bit, I mean, in general, our policy is to wait for a community to ask. We've done it on our own before, but so we do have a community asking. City of Sandpoint also checked in with the fishery associations, both CAMP and Ariam Saners, and they totally agree this was a disastrous season, as well as other fishermen. So if this and the other resolution are passed by the assembly, we would submit them with a letter that would give a little bit more detail from the mayor. So that's what I have on 2520.
Okay, thanks, Ernie. Questions for Ernie?
Paul has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ernie, I just had, you know, before this fall, you know, right after the season, it appeared to a lot of people like there were three fisheries in this area that suffered: the pink fishery, the setnet fishery, as well as the drift gillnet fishery. I'm not sure. I didn't break down the numbers at all, and the drift, for instance, the south side or the north side. I'm not sure how that fits in, but. Why I support these two resolutions, but why don't we have a drift one also, I guess?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So on the next resolution, it specifically cites drift, set, and it's for sockeye, and that's what those...
Oh, I thought it was...
said that also. So the next one is for drift, seine, and setnet. And it specifically cites those, and we would elaborate in the letter.
Oh, okay. I missed
for Saka.
I didn't know if the drifters were included or not.
But you guys will take that up next. And
thank you for clarifying that.
Other questions for Ernie on 2520? Hearing done. Question on a motion?
Paul?
Yes.
Brendan?
Yes.
Lauren?
Yeah.
Lauren?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. We have resolution 2521. We need a motion and a second. Bring it to the floor.
This is Brenda. So moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
This is Chris. I'll second it.
Thank you, Chris. Ernie?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So 2521 requests a fishery disaster determination for the 2024 Alaska Peninsula commercial sockeye salmon fishery. And again, the fourth, whereas sockeye salmon harvest in the north and south peninsula areas combined with the lowest in 10 years and just 51.6% of the previous 5 years average, just 5 years. And then in the next, whereas all the gear groups, setnet, drift, gillnet, and seine, have suffered revenues for the past 2 years, and on top of other stressors that they've had. So, and all the fishermen agree it's been a very tough couple of years. And so we decided to bring out, we didn't want the sockeye and the drift and the set to get lost. And so we have a specific one for sockeye. And that's why we separated them out. And we will submit this, if it's passed, with a letter from the mayor. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Questions on this one for Ernie?
Mr. Mayor, one quick question. Ernie, the price of that the fishermen got paid, as well as if they actually got paid, does that factor into these disasters?
It can. Although I think fishermen would tell you that they got paid a little bit more this year, but still, the 2 years together were pretty bad. Yeah.
And I don't know if some of the salmon fishermen ended up not getting paid.
So. Right. Especially the year before.
I mean, from the...
Yeah. Yeah, it can. weigh into it.
Other comments or questions? Question on the motion?
Tom?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So, Ernie, we may have to check and see if Vance, maybe this summer when you usually bring people around, maybe she'll want to come out and see where Area M is since she's head of the Fisheries Committee and needs to separate us out from other areas.
That's a good call.
So, okay, we have... We're going to go back up the page now to Ordinance 2501, which is second reading?
No, introduction.
So, introduction of Ordinance 2501, order authorizing the disposal of certain real property owned by the Aleutians East Borough. I need a second and a motion to bring it to the floor for scheduling.
This is Brenda. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Brenda. It's going to die.
Jim, one second.
Thank you. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. So Ordinance 2501 is in the relation to the disposal of the teacher housing in Nelson Lagoon. Earlier this afternoon, you passed Resolution 2513, which states that the Assembly finds and declares that the borough can dispose of the property and authorizes the disposal of real property via termination of the teacher's quarters lease with the state. So if this is approved, then at the next meeting, it'll go for the public hearing, and then we can initiate that termination with the state of Alaska. So that means that the land, the building, and all appurtenances would revert back to the state of Alaska. And then if the village council is interested in obtaining that land and the building, then they would work directly with the state for it. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Questions for Annie? Hearing none, question on the motion?
Paul?
Yes.
Paul? Tom?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. That's the most resolutions I've seen in ages. Okay. We have, we don't have anything under old business, but new business, we have two items. First one is Peter Pan Seafood Discussion. Annie.
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. So, as you know, there's a lot going on with the Peter Pan seafood sale. Ernie drafted a memo that I'll have him go over, but we just wanted this before you for discussion purposes. And Ernie, if you want to go ahead and go over your memo, that'd be great.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, there was a request to have a discussion on this. Everybody's been following it pretty closely, obviously, as has the administration. We have been trying to go in the cheap on some of these paywall publications. Finally, we just got them, Intrafish and Undercurrent News especially. And so what I've done is kind of put together a timeline based on headlines and then also some court filings here. Everybody knows that the prevailing bid came from one of the previous investors, Roger May, and there was an objections hearing on October 3rd, and he still has it. There's also a hearing today about an appeal on the Port Moeller plant specifically. So so all of these, any that are from behind a paywall, Intrafish and Undercurrent News, I'm going to take them down. The links will disappear on Friday because I'm not sure I'm supposed to be posting them. So if you want to read them, you can download them, whatever, but they'll disappear on Friday. I wanted to point out some contrary items. Like on 614, it shows OBI, which is the merged company of Ocean Beauty and Icicle. They're supporting Roger May, but then later on in 10-1, October 1, they object to the auction sale to Roger May. And going back then on 8-9, Roger May withdrew his bid, and then he gets the winning bid. So, and then there would be two more articles where about the appeal. And then I put a little thing that Annie picked up on when we were listening to the hearing, and then it was in the reporting in Undercurrent News that the senior secured creditors will be paid, including the state of Alaska for fish tax, and we should get a piece of that, but we haven't heard back from the state, to my knowledge, yet on how much we'll be getting back from that. So, again, we've been following this pretty closely with these fishery industry publications, as well as Joe Levesque has been using his contacts in his office and elsewhere. So that's and we've stayed in contact with the city of King Cove, not wanting to get in front of them as far as any decisions or support or otherwise. So it's there. I can answer maybe any questions on any of this.
Thank you, Ernie. Questions?
Paul has one.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, a bunch of questions. Of course, getting back to some of your comments on those other articles, as the articles pointed out, OBI and Peter Pan had a joint warehouse, and some of that was only concerning the joint warehouse.
Yeah.
And that explains some of the differences. But there's, I guess I'll, other than question, I'll make a couple comments too. Between Port Moeller and King Cove for Peter Pan Seafoods and Trident for Akatan, nothing's much more important in the borough right now. And I don't see any option, but we have to try to take some action, particularly to protect King Cove. They're in deep trouble, it looks like. Whether or not King Cove as a seafood processor is going to survive. I'm glad Warren is here. Perhaps he can fill us in on what they're doing. But the borough has other interests besides just King Cove. We have Port Moeller, too, and they're at court hearing today. It's ongoing right now. It'd be interesting to see how that turns out. And so I know most people are really concerned about where we're going to end up, but we don't seem to be, you know, if we knew what options we had, like, do we have any legal options? If we had those presented to us, we could say, yes, we have these options. Let's see if we can exercise them or not. We can have that debate. But I don't know what options we have right now because there's nothing presented to us in the form of what we should do about this. But those were just some of the comments I had. Thank you.
I could probably answer some of that. So basically, we looked at this. We talked to our legal counsel. We also talked to our lobbyists on it. And there really isn't a lot the borough can do. So looking at it, I felt the best option the borough could take, the one that's going to lose, the borough, of course, is going to lose if all of this stuff falls apart. But the biggest one that's set to lose is the city of King Cove and the community itself. If they lose their processing capability, goes away. I had decided in the best interest of the borough was to let the city of King Cove take the lead, and we would follow their lead and back them on trying to help them whichever way we could. I didn't want to get out ahead of them and go off in a different direction. And then both the borough and the city would look like, I don't know what, if we did that. So it was my decision, basically, to say, we will follow King Cove's lead. They have the most to lose. They can lose their whole community over this. So that's where we're at today. And we didn't get any legal opinion saying that you have an option to do this or to do that. That basically, where we sit. So nobody's been avoiding it or not watching it. I think we've been watching it fairly close. But we weren't going to go in and file a lawsuit on anyone. We didn't have any reason to, in my opinion.
Mr. Mayor, can I just add, sure. Joe Levesque has a lot more attorneys now that he has access to, and those people that really know this process said after the initial bid was accepted that there was no way that it was not going to be finalized, and so we really didn't have any options according to Joe and his office of lawyers. So Annie, I don't know if you have any.
No, I'd echo that. That's exactly what we were told, and I believe the city of King Cove was told the same thing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. One thing we did have an option of doing, and we haven't, is we can talk about it and present things to the communities and to the assembly and let the assembly review things. And, we can't just rely on our administration to make the decisions for us. We have a right and obligation to review things as best we can, because this is a pretty important thing. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm still anxious to hear what the mayor of King Cove has, if they kind of see some options that we could help him out on while he's here. It'd be great.
Yeah, go ahead, Warren. It's a discussion.
Yeah, Warren here. I can make a few comments on this. I know we're watching this whole process unfold. Like you say, we got this, they got a hearing today between Roger and Ketchum, I guess, and whoever else was trying to get Port Muller. Port Muller's been at the forefront of this fight damn near all along. King Cove hasn't been even really thought about. The only thing I see that's come out of this is that it didn't go into bankruptcy. Peter Pan's King Cove plant wasn't parted out yet. It's still in its original state, except for maybe a couple of machines that did leave the port here a few weeks ago with some pellet boards. And they're looking to come in here and get some liners, I guess, out of 25 vans they're supposed to grab. But they broke a fork on their forklift that's not able to be used. And we got till Thursday. We'll know more about where this all, where the whole deal lies, and where can we start to get, I guess you got to solicit investors to be able to find a fish company that will want to operate a plant. But what King Cove is going to do is we're going to advertise for our community and the geographic location, which is in between the Bering Sea and the Pacific. We have the resources out here in the Pacific Ocean that salmon, crab, halibut. We have some buyers that are really interested in processing here in King Cove yet for halibut and black cod. And now we're stuck with, like, the crab. We're losing that this year. I don't know what happened there when this all went under. Nobody was really watching out for their best interest in what they're going to lose if they did stop. Operating. I guess there was some problems with people not knowing how a cannery is supposed to operate and what they had the ability to do, or if they had the fishermen to do it. So anyway, it's all up in the air. We'll find out on Thursday here, and then they want to we have a spot, I guess, at Fish Expo. Myself and Gary and Amber are going to be on a panel down there. And then we'll see if there is some canneries after Thursday that actually, some processors, I guess, that want to operate the King Cove plant. But all we're going to do is keep the people informed of the infrastructure we have in here in King Cove, and then the history of how the town was built. And even if we have to start with a smaller operation, some people on the other companies there, they had all the answers in the Harbor House. So we'll let, you know, I'm sure they tried for getting control of the plant here. I guess maybe they failed, but who's to say? They might be in the works. We all know what Port Moeller is. Port Moeller is a small operation that kind of went by the wayside when everybody, all the fishermen went to the other outfits because of an attraction of the price, or maybe it was just all in the who gets the best bonus checks. I don't know how the heck that worked, but Peter Pan lost all their fishermen up there. How the hell is the plant supposed to stay open anyway when they lose all their fishermen? Now those fishermen want it back. Okay, they're fighting for it right now in court, so that's the way it's going. But King Cove sitting on the sideline, nobody wants King Cove. Well, that you know, we could live on that all day. But what we have to offer here is a lot for the local fishermen, the smaller boats now. I know Sandpoint sees an uptick in their dungies and their halibut blackcod from the Pacific side here now. Maybe the fisheries are so screwed up now with the IFQs that the local fleets can't even afford to go fishing, and the plant can't even afford to run. Maybe we'll all be running our fish to Kodiak. I see Trident just sold their plant in Kodiak today, or yesterday. Must be today. So, you know, you could look at the whole picture. You could see that everybody sold their permits off. All the permits are owned, not owned by the local fishermen anymore. You got the crab. It's all done with rationalization. That killed off a lot of businesses. And now we got the, maybe there'll be an uptick in the crab coming in, and then we got our IPQ here in King Cove. That doesn't even have to be in the community anymore. Oh, the plant went under, whoa, put it somewhere else. We've seen the co-ops. Oh no, all my extra crab, they went on another boat. They didn't get fined. Unfortunately, I was sitting down here in the cannery myself at 1,200 pounds. I was supposed to give to somebody else who actually had 1,200. I got nailed. I got fined $7,000-$8,000. I know there's people who know how to count crab, or people who know how to count halibut, but unfortunately, it's things like that happen. We're just being red tape right off the face of the earth. All the Bering Sea's moving offshore. Dutch Harbor will be a little drop-off port pretty soon. It isn't going to be any fishermen sitting there trying to sell it off, all their catcher boats. See what's happening there. Where does that leave us here? No, that leaves us here with the resources we have that are supposed to come back to the community from our area, whether it be the Bering Sea or all the, you know, just the Pacific side here to make, and if it has to be only salmon, everybody wants to dive into every fishery everywhere. The whole thing has to start up anew again. So if we push reset all the way, that's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of people who want to actually process some fish. You know how to make money on fish. You got the buyers who buy from the processor. You know that everybody takes their cut of that fish. We go out here and catch a codfish now. We go out here and catch a crab now. There's five legs gone before we even get paid. It's already done. It's already in an IFQ. It's already in an IPQ. There's too many shares taken out of that poor resource that we have out here. To save our communities, if it comes down to it, we'll just have to play the blue card. We could play a native role. Let's do the native shares. You know, to save our community. That's what it'll have to take. I know that you could go to the council meetings. You could talk till you're blue in the face. They got a lot of other people working for them besides the poor little folks in the communities here. And I know that with our budget shrinking, it's going to be harder and harder again to even be able to revive some of the stuff that's dying out here. It's not right. If it has to go to offshore processing, you know, we can cash buyers again or something. It's a company that came 100 years. It was processing. So the people that were running the show, they all retired off. The last of the people of the owners that had Peter Pan. And then I noticed today on Facebook, they're raising the Peter Pan flag down at the cannery again. So whatever that means, I don't know. But the power is on down at Peter Pan right now. They're running an engine. They got a boat coming in, a barge coming in to bring them fuel. The city's working with the receivership right now to get extra power from the city because if they didn't want to run their generators type thing, we could sell them some excess power we have. The reason I say that is because we don't have a Trident fleet. We don't have a Crab fleet that comes in and ties up in our boat harbor anymore to buy power from the city. That's why that powerhouse was upgraded. So maybe if we're talking extra power, you know, we do have some recoverable heat that way for what Brenda was talking about, swimming pool. Your costs will be down. And I know that participating in the borough process, participating in the city process, we are going to be advertising. I know that the advertise for our community, the infrastructure we have to support a plant, to be able to process the resources from this area, to keep our local fleet intact, to keep our city alive. That's going to, you know, we're here. We're still here. But the plant's not here. You think you could take the undertaking on of trying to own the company. Well, when you start owning the company or you start owning the land down there, the person who has to operate has to come in and negotiate their lease deal. So you got to make sure you could keep the power on, the lease going, the cannery intact, the roof blows off, okay, who takes care of that? You know, stuff fails down there, so that's yours now. And that all has to be figured out. Where does that leave the fisherman's price again? Right in the dumpster. So anyway, I think I better be done talking here now, and we'll just wait till Thursday, see what comes out of it, and we'll have our owner of the assets without a processing company that's in play at the moment to be able to restart this plant. But we know we have fishermen here, and that's what we'll have to advocate for, is for another processor that who can bring together the Bering Sea cod and pollock, bring them in. They want to bring them to King Cove to process. We have the black cod, the halibut, the crab, the dungies, the salmon, and there's a lot of resources out here we could process here. The equipment's still here, and then it didn't go into bankruptcy, so it won't be all parted out. That's probably what would have happened if it went into bankruptcy, and that would have took a lot longer than what's happening now. And I see that we might have some a glimmer of hope if we get another processor in the state or out of state that wants to process some fish here in King Cove. So I think that's about it for now.
Okay. Thank you, Orr. So others have comments on this Peter Pan seafood discussion?
I just have a question. It just seems like there might have been something going on. I don't know what the appeals are, but for the $250,000 difference in the bid for the next highest bidder, anybody have anything on that?
Zuri Weiss, I certainly have some suspicions, but I have no knowledge of any mishandling of anything.
$250,000 for Port Muller?
$250,000 for the package. $250,000 difference on the bid.
Well, if you look at the bids was $250,000 above. They had 3-day window that they could make those bids, and in those 3 windows,
I'm talking about the actual bid, 37.1 and 37.3 or something like that. It came out to $250,000 difference on the bid.
Yes, and on that paper it shows that where Silver Bay tried to get up and pass Peter Pan, but they didn't have the actual assets in hand.
So, Roger May owns the company. Has anybody been in contact to see what his intentions are? If he's going to split it up?
You can.
If he's going to reopen?
Until they get done with this rest of this court process, I don't think he's going to talk to anybody. You know, today they're having another hearing. Actually, it's going on now, probably. And I think that's over the, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's over the Port Moore section of it. The hearing today, whether or not they can separate that out, I believe what I read. But I wouldn't imagine anybody's going to say anything until this is done.
Big question of how long it may take. With lawyers.
From what, Ernie, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from what I've seen, Wells Fargo Bank had put a deadline of October 15th, and then after that, they were going to put money in for the solicitors or however that worked, that they were out of it come then, so there wouldn't be any money to continue on.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ernie, one of the things that I always was wondering about with this bid process, it seemed to be like a flawed process, and I haven't seen an answer for that. Why one person ended up with everything, even though some of the things were so cheap. You know, King Cole was valued at $1. I would have bid $2. Maybe somebody would have bid $3, but it didn't make any sense. And have you seen an answer of why that wasn't broken down individually, even though it's a receivership? And I had to Google a lot to learn the difference between a receivership and a bankruptcy. But it seemed like there was something seriously flawed with the way that happened. But
I have no answer for that. I don't understand.
And then I concur with Jimmy that we need to, as soon as possible, I don't know when that would be, but find out directly from Roger May and invite him to tell us what his plans are. Thank you.
Other comments? Questions? Okay. So, Board of Fish work session discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I'll start. Charlotte and I worked on this memo and a draft letter. The work session is later this month, 29th and 30th, and they'll look over agenda change requests. I've put a little three-year meeting cycle, and after this meeting cycle goes through, then it starts over. And you can also put in an agenda change request, an ACR, and there was one ACR out of the 15 that caught our eye, which is agenda change request 13, submitted by the Western Interior Regional Advisory Committee, and it would force Saners to shorten leads and also the depth. They would have to take out two strips. And according to fishermen, it would cost fishermen probably $7,000 per net to do that. So there's a document that the staff puts out, RC2, and in that the staff said, no, it does not meet the criteria for an agenda change request. You can see that the criteria has to be for a fishery conservation purpose. It has to correct a regulation, an error in regulation, or correct an effect on a fishery that was unforeseen. Also, it cannot be predominantly allocative without new information. And they didn't, in our opinion, they didn't show any new information. And it is allocative, in our opinion. Anyway, so we would like to, we will submit this letter that would have the mayor's signature on it, and it talks about some of that stuff. And I will let Charlotte add anything she wants to on the letter.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I don't have much to add. The letter, we focus really on the fact that this ACR does not meet the criteria. It doesn't follow process, and our emphasis is really just on, you know, being clear that it doesn't meet the criteria, and that the board already took action that's being implemented at the last regular in-cycle meeting, and is currently, for all intents and purposes, been successful and has accomplished the goals that the board set out for the program and the harvest triggers. And there is no reason for this to be accepted. And on top of that, a sort of similar proposal had already come through and been rejected previously. And so the letter just emphasizes that's kind of the focus.
And the ACR didn't acknowledge any of the work that's currently ongoing by the Seine Fishermen. I would note, though, if you look at the new members on the board, particularly Curtis Chamberlain, there's a real chance that the board will just accept it and then schedule it anyway. If it was accepted, they would probably schedule it for the next meeting in Anchorage, which is the statewide shellfish. Hopefully it doesn't get that far. I was on the Fairbanks AC call, and of course they are supporting this big time. None of our local ACs that I know of are putting any information in. I did get the Anchorage AC to ignore it anyway, so they're not commenting on it. So that's comments are due tomorrow, so we will move this quickly. And anybody else who wants to put in comments, it's easy to go to the Board of Fish website. I put a link to where you can put in your own comments. Thank you, Mr. Mann.
Okay. Thank you. Questions on this from anyone? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Reports and updates. Annie.
Yes, Mayor Osbeck and Assembly. My report is in the packet. I'll start just with an update briefly on the Cold Bay Clinic. On September 10th, administration did sign a Cold Bay Clinic renovation additive alternate project management construction management amendment with Dow in the amount of $34,480. This will either be paid by Eastern Aleutian Tribes or from the borough and the Cold Bay Clinic line item, but I believe EATS will be paying for that. But this is for work that's outside the existing HRSA grant that we have that can't be included in the scope. So anything outside basically will be covered under the add alternate services. And then on October 8th, UIC Naparit, who is the contractor, Dow, the borough, the city of Cold Bay, and Eastern Aleutian Tribes did attend a construction kickoff meeting. UIC is planning to mobilize in late October to start working on the project with a substantial completion date of January 15th, 2025. There will be some exterior work that will need to occur in the spring, like painting and things like that once the weather improves. So that will happen in the spring, but the interior work should be done in January, which is really exciting to have that project almost completed. Then we have the King Cove Road. Not much to report here, but the supplemental EIS is in the process of being reviewed by the Department of Interior. The department does anticipate that the draft SEIS will be out for review sometime in November. We don't have a date yet for that. And then a record of decision will not be issued by Secretary Holland before the change in administration, regardless of who wins the November election. So that's really disheartening on many fronts, because we thought that that would be done prior to the election in November, but that is not going to be the case. Any questions so far?
Okay, so school maintenance, there's a lot going on. The Sandpoint boilers, we had a technician go out October 7th through the 11th to complete that work. I believe that they finished everything and they serviced the school, the office, and the fourplex. So all three buildings should be up and running. The sewage pipes is ongoing. The materials for the sewage pipe project should arrive on Coastal on October 17th, and then Gould will be coming out to finish that repair. The False Pass School boilers, we had folks go out on, I think, August 29th. They arrived out there and completed that work. It did take them a while, and there were some issues, but they've got those all resolved. And then False Pass electrical work needs to be finished at the False Pass School as well. There was some items with the fire, like lights and stuff, that took a while to get ordered. Those have arrived, and Fulford Electric will be traveling out. Hopefully they got out today to complete that work that Wired AK had started. And then we have the King Cove School. That work has been completed. On October 4th, the borough did pay the remaining deductible balance of $22,600 that was billed to the deferred maintenance line item, and then the remainder of that project will be billed directly by AMLJIA. So a lot of deferred maintenance happening at the moment. Sandpoint Harbor Float Project, we are making quite a bit of progress on that. On the 6th, we did issue that RFP. For the work, numerous addendums have been issued. We've also had a pre-bid meeting on September 25th to provide like a high-level overview of the project. Numerous entities did attend, which is promising, and then those bids are due October 21st. We are also having a meeting with MARAD on this project to discuss the next steps of the grant requirements on, like, how do we report, do our reports, how do we ask for reimbursement, etc. So we'll be learning more about that this week. The deed project is in full swing. We're still doing the 65% cost reconciliation. I believe tomorrow I have a meeting with Dell to go over that. So the goal of this reconciliation is to reduce costs as much as possible, find cost savings where we can. If there's any value engineering, like if they use this part instead of this part to cut costs, that's kind of what we're going through right now. I do believe that the project will cost more than what we even anticipated prior. So if that's the case, once this is finalized, I'll be coming back to the assembly with some more information on that, but I don't have anything at this time to present. But that project is moving forward. Also, a ton of work's been done in the Cold Bay Terminal. The cargo doors were serviced on September 6th, so those doors should all be working. There was a fire sprinkler inspection and deficiency correction that occurred in September, on September 23rd. And then the elevators were just inspected last week, and we actually had to do a big Category 5 inspection that is required every 5 years. And that was completed, and Kurt said that they made it in and out last week to finish those repairs. And then I did a presentation last week, I believe it was Thursday, and I'm going to probably butcher this, I apologize, but the Anunga Communities Conference did a brief presentation about what the borough is up to for that. And then lastly, I just wanted to give an update on the Renew America grant. This morning, I actually got an email from Nils Andreasen from AML basically asking for a cost share commitment letter, and he needs it really quickly. So there's a couple budget periods for this project. The first one's budget period one. It's a total of $500,000 worth of grant monies, and it requires a 5% match. And they're doing it based off a pro rata share between this number of schools. So the Aleutians East Borough has 4 schools, so our share would be $9,569. The city and borough, Juneau Borough, has more, so theirs is going to be $11,962. And then there's the Southeast Island School District, who will have a commitment of $4,785. So he needs this like pretty much immediately. So if the mayor's okay with that, we're going to submit that letter. And then when we get further down with period two and further, We'll have numbers in advance to bring before the assembly, but basically we'll have to commit to 25% cost share in budget two, with actual amounts determined on allocated basis according to the number of schools and or prioritized improvements. So that'll be in the commitment letter, but anything further will come before the assembly for approval. So anyway, with that, there's just a ton going on, but if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Questions? Okay. Talia.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Assembly. My report is also in the packet. Today, I'm going to start off with the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant. Something I do want to go back to emphasize is that on March 28th, under the advice of the EECBG Fellows, I did switch this from a grant to a rebate voucher. So essentially what we're going to be doing is changing some of the lights at the King Hope School to LED, more proficient lighting. The good news is on September 25th, after submitting the required paperwork, I did get approval from the state that we are able to go ahead and move forward. So that means that we can go ahead and start purchasing the items. In terms of next steps, I will be meeting with I'll be meeting with the ECBG this week just to fine-tune a couple of things in terms of their the requirements, making sure that I am fully aware of the dates, the times, and what they look like, since this is fairly new to me. So then from there, I plan on meeting with Dow, and also we're going to be bringing Lonnie in to see if this is perhaps something that he can do, or if I need to perhaps outsource this. And if we do, the Davis-Bacon letter, it has been sent out, so I am prepared for whichever direction we go into. Moving on to the Healthy and Equitable Communities grant, I'm happy to report that this grant is officially closed out. We were able to purchase 3 morgues as well as a generator for the Cold Bay Clinic. All the reporting has been submitted as of last week. There's nothing really new to report for the False Pass morgue. Paul Mueller is still working to find a new location for it, since the previous location is no longer available. I didn't write this on my report, but I did want to note that Glenora and I are working on a community support grant through the Rasmussen Foundation. So that's about $250,000 that we're looking to see if perhaps we can use for the new pool. Moving on to the Accutan hangar generator. On the 17th of September, we did go ahead and purchase the new generator. As of last week, Tacoma Diesel did confirm that they did receive that new generator in. So they're ordering additional parts, and I did submit information over to them on flights and lodging, so they have an idea on what to send me back in terms of a more comprehensive quote so that we can move forward and get that new generator out in Accutan. Once it's done, again, I really want to reiterate, I've been working with Trident and Maritime to make sure that we get a load and we have everything prepared in advance in case something happens to this generator. So we want to minimize maintenance. Moving on to the ISO tank, that was purchased a couple of weeks ago. Matson is unfortunately a bit, they're short on staff, and with last week's issues with the weather, the high winds, I'm still waiting to get a booking number from them. So that is something that I have to pretty much stay on top of. But for the most part, we have done everything we can do on our end to provide all the information that Matson, Trident, and Delta Western is requesting from me in order to get this tank out to Accutane. So again, this is developing and I'll stay on top of it. Maintenance connection, continuing to stay on top of it. I have reached out to Superintendent. So working with that to make sure that everyone who is at the schools are familiar with the system and that they are putting in work orders as they're coming in. And if they don't have time to put them in, I'm asking that they just shoot me an email and I'll make sure that that's inserted, because we want to make sure for capital improvement projects, the state is seeing that we're actively working on maintenance. And we are. We're putting a lot into maintenance. And that is pretty much it. If anyone has any questions, just let me know.
Thank you, Talia. Questions?
Is it a coincidence that you're talking about morgues and it's Halloween coming up?
No more morgues for me. That was a fun project, fun grant.
Okay. Ernie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My report's in the packet as well. At some point in time, I'm just going to say that and then have any questions, but not today. I would note with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, Charlotte mentions that in her report that she testified. She also wrote a good letter, and I would note that anytime Charlotte signs her name or introduces herself as fishery analyst for the borough, it reflects well on the borough. So thank you, Charlotte. I go through the process how the council sets their CRAB, ABCs, and OFLs, and the plan team met four times this year, specifically in September, for these three, Bristol Bay Red King Crab, Snow Crab, and Bering Eastern and Western Barrenjoey. If the SSC had just taken the recommendations from the plan team, it sounds like there would not have been a snow crab fishery, but what they did was increased the buffer, the variability on ABCs, and then what they recommended to the council basically always accepts that. And so I've shown the last, this year included 10 years, so you can see how the tax, because hours after the council takes those recommendations, then the Department of Fish and Game sets those tax, and that's what those are at. You can find other motions from the council agenda on a link I put there. I did meet with staff members there to talk about what we had talked about with Joe Sullivan, to possibly set something up for the AFA discussion for an eligible pollock processing community. And at this point, I think it wouldn't necessarily just apply to Accutane, but maybe also King Cove. If these companies take their pollock elsewhere, which they can now do, we might be able to put some in. It's a long shot, probably, but I did talk to some staff members, and they were receptive to that. The mayor, Osterbeck, and Gary were on a meeting reestablishing Bristol Bay Red King Crab right of first refusal, and I guess I forgot, or I now understand that all of the Bristol Bay Red King Crab that was earned in King Cove and or Port Moeller was not sold as part of the Peter Pan sale. It was kept by the Maruja Nitro or Westward. And so we still have a chance to get that back into King Cove. The Mark Johansson was real receptive, possibly working with us in the future, but that crab will be processed in Dutch this year. And Shannon Carroll, our friend from Trident, is now the AP chair, at least for December. And then the U.S. Government Accountability Office, at the request of Senator Sullivan, met with a bunch of fishery disaster people who have request determinations in the past. And I met with them. It was a good meeting. And I've just listed some of the fishery disaster determinations that we've been involved with. And last thing, I would say AFN goes on this week. And there's two resolutions that do not target us, but that could possibly be amended to target us. So just watch out for Resolution 1 and Resolution 2 at AFN. And that's all I have, Mayor. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ernie. Questions for Ernie?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ernie, there's an issue, a 20-year-old issue. Maybe I'm off a couple of years. It's kind of resurrecting itself, and that's rationalization in the Gulf. In fact, the Trident news release just came out, mentioned the Trident Kodiak sale. Their Pacific's picking up all their initiative. They're trying to solve what they perceive as bycatch issues by supporting rationalization. And the last time it came up, I'm going to speak a little longer because it's pretty important. But the last years ago when it came up, it was noted that for our area, South Peninsula, that there's a lot of hired skippers that are under a federal rationalization system are out. They're going to be out of luck. And there's other issues that are coming up with this too. And anyway, they're going to be a big push, apparently. I wasn't at the council meeting, but I've heard from many people who seem like they've geared this up again. And I think it behooves the borough, because we go to the meetings, to make sure we have involvement from everybody and develop a solid position, whatever it is. And anyway, I just wanted to spend a little time about that. Thank you.
And Charlotte might mention that during her report, but I don't have any information to you.
Other comments or questions for Ernie? Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. You have my report. As usual, I'll start with projects. So for EM, as Ernie mentioned very nicely, I did testify at the October AP and Council meeting under the C4 ADP agenda item. There was a surprising major concern with NIMS not allocating funds in the 2025 ADP for observer coverage in our shoreside plants in the Western Gulf, as well as the cost of service and maintenance for our Western Gulf tenders. And as you're probably all aware, the Western Gulf is now 100% tendered for the pollock fishery, and so that would have completely precluded our vessels from participating in EM. So I went to the council and I threw a big fit about it. And so that problem has been resolved, but I did take a little bit of time to talk to the processors and try to come up with some historical data on tender use to help the region come up with a better calculation for how to predict tender use in the Western Gulf, because that was kind of their excuse of why they didn't include it. Is that we don't know how many tenders you guys use because it changes. And I said, that's why we do predictive analysis. So anyways, I did talk about that. I also included the contract for Cordata. So we just worked on that. And I'm sure by now all of you have heard about the PSC lightning strike for Chinook that happened in the Central Gulf this season. So there's been a lot of interest in maybe expanding our data portal to the Kodiak fleet. I mentioned that earlier. And then ultimately that could become kind of like how we do with salmon, a model for mimicking kind of what they do with rolling hotspots in the Bering Sea. There's just, you know, PSC hotspot stuff is a real top issue right now. So there's just a lot of interest in how we can manage PSC better in season. So that's exciting. Moving on to salmon. I mentioned this a few times, but I usually help publish a report that goes to the Board of Fish on the June adaptive management program. And it took a little bit of time because we had to reconcile some of the fish tickets in the portal, but we did finish that report, and I believe the Saners will be submitting that as a formal report to the Board of Fish, not as a public comment under the ACR. And so I included some stats in there if you guys are interested in the performance this past June, especially relative to, you know, past couple of years and the historical averages. But again, overall, it was a decrease in income harvest. And I would note that, of course, that is going to fluctuate from year to year. And that is just an inevitable part of the fishery, as you guys know. And to not put too much emphasis on a static historical harvest number as like a cap or anything, because that just doesn't work. For the cod tagging project, like I said in my previous report, we were waiting for some tags to pop up in September to get an idea of how many warranted tags we'll have because of a previous manufacturer issue. And now we believe we'll have roughly 30 tags total. I met with our PAC State's grant administrator, and there has been a lot of really positive feedback on this project and from stock assessment authors on the value that it has provided to them and understanding cod. So there is another $60,000 that PAC States would like to give us for this project. And there's potentially another $60,000 on top of that, which would be $120,000 additional funds. It's kind of a big deal. We're trying to figure out kind of what's the next phase of this project to really make it count, so to speak. And there's talk with stock assessment authors about potentially trying to build an acoustic array in Unimac Pass and then use acoustic telemetry on Pacific cod and also pollock, which is a very interesting turn of events because many of the scientists suspect that pollock do the same thing that cod do. They transition or they, you know, migrate between the Western Gulf and the Bering Sea. And of course, pollock are managed very similarly to cod in that there are discrete management boundaries. In fact, they have completely separate fishery management plans between the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. So this could be potentially a very big deal, not just for cod, but also for our pollock fisheries in the Western Gulf. So very exciting news. I'm also right now working on a spatial model to try to estimate the proportion of migration of pecod from the Western Gulf to the Bering Sea. And the hope is that this will help inform stock assessment authors on the discrepancy between the quota, essentially the tack that they estimate based on summer surveys in the Gulf versus what our fishermen see in the winter in the Gulf. And we know that there's going to be kind of some missing tack, so to speak. So I'm working on that now. Put a little bit of the summary statistics in there. The last thing I was going to mention, Assembly Member Grunhold brought up rationalization in the Gulf. This is particularly for pollock and potentially pecod trawl fisheries. And I just wanted to note that I've been on some of those calls with the industry groups and with the Commissioner DVL, as well as John Perland, and the Peninsula Fishermen's Coalition has been involved in all of those meetings. And there's some discussion right now on alternative methods besides just a formal rationalization program to get something like that accomplished and to try to build in some other program or, parts of the package like skipper shares and things that are very important and kind of nuanced in the Western Gulf that may not apply in Kodiak. So those discussions are definitely happening, and the Western Gulf fishermen have been included. And I believe Mr. Alfieri of the Ocean Storm has been taking the lead on communicating the Western Gulf's interests in a potential rationalization program. So once again, that was a long report. I'm sorry. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Charlotte. Questions? Okay. Thank you for your reports, everyone.
Got one question?
Oh, go ahead.
On, I see our tagging studies we're doing here in the Shumigans and in the Western Gulf. Is there tagging studies done in Kodiak Southeast on cod?
That's a great question. So we do tagging studies in the Central Gulf region. We've been doing it the last 2 years all the way to Prince William Sound. There hasn't been much satellite tagging of cod in like the southeast or sort of the eastern management areas, but there's interest. We've gotten actually calls from some of the fish and game employees out of Homer and Juneau who want to get in on it so they can tag their fish out, you know, in the Eastern Gulf. But for us, we've only gone as far as kind of underneath Prince William Sound.
What about the Bering Sea, Eastern Bering Sea cod? Are they tagged at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's quite a bit. And actually, I could include some of those data in my next report if you want. But that actually came kind of before the Gulf tagging. So they tagged Bering Sea cod first. And we actually do release a few through, you know, in this project, through the NIMS survey and also on some of the freezer longliners, kind of opportunistically. It's a little more complicated in the Bering Sea, though, because they have a lot of their fish move around all over the place between spawning and feeding grounds, you know, because they have a lot of different spawning areas up there. But there have been several tags that came down from the Bering Sea, the Eastern Bering Sea, and I think one even from the Northern Bering Sea up by Savunga down into the Western Gulf to Sanak. Okay.
Yeah, we all know that codfish is pretty vital to our existence out here also, and I just, I'm glad we're doing this so we could actually put put some data out there. And I know you're doing a lot of, I guess, some data sharing now where all the agencies are working together to come up with, an overall picture of what happens out here when... Is there any take on, like, if the we know that the cod spawn out here in the Shimmigans and the Sanak area? So I know that the fish end up at the Bering Sea, and then we have an idea if they're spawning here and they come back from the Bering Sea that. You know, we haven't had a season one here for quite a while now, and I know there's some other fisheries that are growing actually on cod. So we just hate to be cut out of existence because of like the data we're portraying is saying that they're spawning here, so that's the car fish or something. Is there any of that talk going on?
Oh yeah, there's lots of that talk going on, and I won't get into too much detail because it's still very early, but I will say I've been working with the Kodiak staff at Fish and Game as they have recently started a sampling program for cod in the Dutch Harbor sub-district, the Area O fishery, and I don't think anybody would be super surprised to hear that fishery catches a lot of, you know, migratory cod that could be headed to spawning grounds in the Western Gulf. And I think there is definitely concern about that and what that means for the spawning population if they're harvested before they get a chance to come down to the Western Gulf. So I have started looking at those data. The department was really, really great. They sent the data over to me. So we're starting to look at that and figuring out what does that mean in the big picture. But yeah, we're definitely having those conversations, and yeah.
Okay, I got one more question on the Pacific pollock, the biomass in the areas here. With our season going on now, and we all know that when a certain like baby salmon, smolts heading out to the ocean, and there's a big biomass of pollock out there. Do you think that our seasons, the quotas are high enough in this area to be able to, I know that it's a processor issue again, to thinking about a higher quota, and I know that the markets all play a game in it, but is there talk about what size of a biomass has to be out here to sustain itself, and what size biomass is out on the Pacific side to be able to keep the other fisheries sustainable with them like eating the smolts or something, you know? Is there any talk like that going on, or is just, I know in the past, I know it was like there was no pollock down here, but now there is, and then we're saying global warming is pollock is a cold water fish type thing. You know, you could go on for days and days like this, but is there any talk on a biomass that's, I know, like workable for the fisheries around here and for keeping it down low enough so we could actually have like a humpy fishery disaster because of the pollock ate all this humpy smolt or something?
Yeah, so that's actually another really great question. So I think the short answer is not enough. People are not talking about it enough. I would just kind of note an interesting thing. If on the Prince William Sound Board of Fish agenda, there is a proposal in there to shut down the state water pollock fishery. And I think that is kind of an interesting sort of catalyst to talk about, well, what does it mean when you don't fish pollock, you know? And if you have too much pollock swimming around eating everything, especially smolts, which they do, what does that mean, like, you know, ecologically? And I think the same question could be applied across the Gulf, including our region. I can't really answer what that number is, like if we currently have enough of attack to kind of keep that balance in check. But I think it's a really interesting question. And I, you know, if we had a better surveys out here, I think that might help get after that. But unfortunately, we don't. And I think money for surveys is only going down. So, sorry, that's a half answer.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Charlotte, for your report. I guess I look at the 31% coming up, you know, going back to the Northern Bering Sea from the Gulf of Alaska. So is that a bullet point for us to go to the council with? And once they start tagging an area, oh, maybe that number will come up.
Yeah, so, it's a tricky one. And I think the answer is yes. I think there is enough to start. I probably have to be careful about doing that because I'm directly involved in the research. But I certainly think, and I'm planning to bring this up in the November plan team meetings, to start talking about what do interim measures look like. So, you know, maybe we can't fully put this into the stock assessment right now yet, but we have enough evidence to say, well, maybe there needs to be a stair step measure between the Bering Sea quota and the Western Gulf quota or something like that, you know, and that would be followed up at the council, you know, during the tax setting process. I think it's actually a great time to start have fishermen go up and start talking about that. And I'm happy to help, you know, provide what information I can.
Thank you.
Other questions? You know, one thing Assembly hopefully realizes too, that as we've been going along with this survey work and the tagging studies, basically NIMS wasn't doing it. They had the money, but they didn't have personnel, my understanding was. So with our resource department, with Ernie and Charlotte taking the lead on it, a lot of the graphs and the work that you've seen done is coming out of our resource department through Charlotte with funding from NOAA, because they don't have the personnel to go out and do this. A lot of this probably happened because of COVID, because every time I go to a meeting anywhere with any government agency, whether it's federal or state, they have funding, they don't have any people. And it seems to be, it doesn't seem to be getting any better. I was in meetings not long ago, and the same things were brought up, that they just didn't have the personnel and they couldn't get them. So anyway, it's kudos to Charlotte and Ernie for where we are today as far as the surveys go, the tagging studies, and what we do know as of today. So thank you, guys. So if there's no other questions, we're down to assembly comments. Everybody's done commenting?
Mr. Mayor, Phil Griefman, Swampsea just offered an executive director job to Juanetta Ayers, who was Swampsea executive director before, and I think she'll accept it. She hasn't yet officially, but she'll start next month and be on for a few years. Some of you may remember her, but the plan, of course, is still have a Swampsea meeting in the first week of March, I believe. So anyway, that's your Swampsea news. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
Just like to welcome back the assembly members and comment on the pool project. I hope we can get a pool as quick as possible. Speak of government. Not sure how we'd accomplish it, but I hope we all can do that quickly.
Do you think these new assembly members will be different?
I must move ahead of some of them because they're new.
Other comment.
I just am excited to be back on for another 3 years. I think this is my fourth term, and I enjoy being on the assembly. And I know that we're these last couple of years and we're not out of it yet are going to be challenging for the borough. And I'm just happy that I can try to help out for all of our communities within the borough. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
This is Brenda. I'd just like to say thank you and to everybody out there that it's an honor and a privilege to be on this board and to be able to be part of this process of growing our region and our communities. And I think that's what we're doing, even though these canneries, I remember, wasn't it just a couple of years ago? Remember the discussions and the meetings we had about Acatan. And then for a little while, it was about Sandpoint because Sandpoint's cannery was closing down for the winter. And then I did a complete 360, and here's King Cole. So I think we're all going to grow in some way, shape, or form that's going to be better suit us in the future. But we have to be ahead of what is coming because I think canneries are going to change. They're going to evolve. They're going to create a system that the delivery is going to be outside of our region. Many of the things we aren't going to have direct say over. They are a private business, but if they don't have a base in your region, there's a lot we're just going to have to be at the table with and discuss and be supportive of these people who are coming into our region. I mean, I was so excited to see lights on down that camp. I was like a little kid. Look, there's a little light on. It's down by the gas house. Like a little crazy person just up and down in my house. But I think to me that's a start. And a few minutes ago, that was all approved, so Roger May's got his canneries, and we can move forward and be supportive of whoever is coming in here to be part of this situation. None of us know. And so we will wait until he's willing to reach out and ask for support or guidance in how he's going to reuptake his canneries that he has. There's got to be some idea or some thought, and if we come to the table willing to support and encourage, enhance what he has for our future, I think is going to be the ultimate goal, not only for this cannery, but for all of them. What can we do to better suit the people that are staying in our communities? The Sandpoint, if they're closing down their cannery, even for a portion of the year, that's a loss to the community. And the same thing with Falls Pass. And I think we have to be thinking ahead, what is it we can do to encourage and support commerce, business to come to this region? Yes, we're mostly fishing, but what do the fishermen need? What do the fishermen want that could be done here in the region that people can possibly support? And I think that goes to show us is we're going to have a difficult time as everyone in the state in coming up with the personnel to be in those jobs. All of us know from the schools, to the clinics, to the tribes, to the corporations, to our canneries, all the way up to us, is we have a shortage of people. We have a shortage of people willing to step up to the table and go to work. So what is it that they're needing to be able to be successful in the workplace? And I think that's we're going to have to evolve as a business also to the younger generation. Okay, I'm done preaching. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brenda. Good points. And we do got to work together. So as this thing goes forward here, hopefully soon, we'll be able to make a plan once this all settles out of court and we can figure out which direction we all have to go. So appreciate that. Other comments? Okay. So public comments. I don't really see any public, so beyond that. Okay, so our next meeting date is November 14th, which will be a regular meeting at 2 o'clock. So we need a motion to adjourn.
A motion, this is Chris, that we adjourn.
Thank you, Chris. This is Brenda, second.
Thanks, Brenda.
See you guys later.
You guys take care.
Bye. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you.